for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Yoel Mohn, the new president and CEO of NPR, says public radio journalism is more important than ever. He argues that with newspapers struggling, cable news becoming more sensational, and local TV news focusing on crime, public radio's in-depth reporting has become even more vital. Yoel Mohn joins me in the studio. We welcome your questions, comments, 800-433-8850. You can send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Yoel Mohn, it's good to have you here at WAMU.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. You know, I've been wondering why someone like you, who had a very comfortable lifestyle in California, would want to come to Washington and take on NPR. Tell us why.
Because I love public radio. I love NPR. I think it's a national treasure. I think it's just a remarkable institution, as are many of the public radio stations around the country, like WAMU. And I was involved in public radio in Los Angeles. I was on the board of KPCC, Southern California Public Radio, and was involved there for 12 years and ultimately chair of that board. So I got to see kind of close up as one can, while not being in the institution, what was going on. And I'd been kind of working for myself for 12 years, but I thought I might be able to. I had some very strong ideas about what we needed to do. So it's a mission for me.
Give me a sense of some of those strong ideas.
Well, a lot of it relates to, and you know, I think most of your listeners are aware that NPR has had some financial difficulties over the last six or so years. And my analysis from the outside and now as an inside person is that a lot of that is just related to business practices, because the content, the programming, for the most part, I think has been really, really wonderful. Is it going to be better? Can it be better? Of course. And we're going to work at making the journalism better, the storytelling better. But as it exists, it's really quite a remarkable institution with wonderful people doing terrific work. That kind of attention has not been paid, in my view, on the business side. And I think one of the reasons, understandably, is a lot of people that get into this for really wonderful reasons. They're journalists. They want to cover the news. They want to cover stories. And so there's not a lot of attention paid to kind of the boring parts of the business, which is making sure that it can be run profitably. Or at least not lose money.
You know, it's interesting. Ever since I've been here, of course, we've gone to listeners for at least half, sometimes more, of the operating budget of the station. I think probably most stations around the country do the same. Is that model outdated?
No, I think public radio, whether it's locally or whether it's nationally with NPR, has a really remarkable opportunity, because there are a number of sources of revenue. There's going directly to listeners, going to for individual gifts, going to foundations and institutions. Even corporations have philanthropic arms. And then there's corporate underwriting, where a number of brands will support NPR or public radio stations. There are lots of things that can be done to, I think, to find the revenue. I just don't think we've done a great job of convincing people of the great value. And that's one of the things we want to focus on.
One of the sources of revenue you left out was the U.S. government. And I learned just the other day that you've got Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who has now decided, as the new governor, he's going to cut the budget for public radio, public television, by 37%. 5%.
Wow.
How do you deal? How does NPR, the parent company, if you will, assist, reach out to a station like that, which is obviously going to have a lot of problems, and with other Republican governors who may follow suit?
Yeah. Well, we're following the story very closely. We have a lot of great friends in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Public Radio is a terrific organization and one of the first in public radio. One of the very first. They're pioneers. They do a remarkable job there. One of the guy who runs Wisconsin Public Radio, Mike Crane, is on our board of directors at NPR. So we're very attuned and aware of what's going on there. First, I left the federal government out of my equation of our sources of revenue because for us at NPR, a lot of people don't know this. There's the mythology that we're supported by the federal government. NPR directly, we get 1.5% of our budget. It's indirectly from the government through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's a very small amount of money. The most important thing about federal or state support is that the people that get hurt are the local radio stations, not us and NPR. And that's where this journalism is really important in these communities. If you live in a large metropolitan area, you can get newspapers, you have access to a lot of information about what's going on nationally, internationally, your community. But in the smaller the communities, the tougher it is to get that kind of information about what's going on. And that is why public radio is really important, whether it's Washington, D.C., Madison, Wisconsin, some of the rural communities in Wisconsin. I think, you know, that when people start to speak up about the funds being pulled back in Wisconsin for public radio and public television, there's going to be an incredible, cry from the public.
But if the governor has decided, if you have a Republican legislature, there's not going to be too much sympathy for public radio. We hear it all the time in terms of criticism of, you know, public radio, WAMU specifically. I'm not going to allow one more dollar of my taxes to go to public radio. There is a feeling out there that, of course, public radio gets a lot more money than it actually gets. So you've got to change the perception all the way down.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Wisconsin specifically, I think what's going to happen, and, whether it's a Republican governor or a Democratic governor or a Democratic legislature or a Republican legislature, you know, politicians of either party are very finely attuned to the wishes of their constituents. They always are. And Wisconsin Public Radio has got an incredible following and very deeply loyal and committed listeners. I think when they start to speak out, Scott Walker, I think the legislature there is going to ultimately be responsive because their constituents love it, want it.
What about here in Washington on Capitol Hill? How much time will you have to spend there?
I don't know the real answer to that. We've just started making appointments and speaking to people. What's fascinating to me is, you know, the incredible support that we've heard from a lot of senators and congressmen of both parties. The issue is, in some cases, what they feel their constituents are interested in, and that's one of the reasons why we want to make sure we have an outreach program so that constituents speak up and let their feelings known, regardless of what party they're in. We have had, the handful of meetings I've had to date, and I'll be doing more of them. We have been incredibly warmly received.
How about the charge that public radio is really leftist public radio? How do I'm sure you encounter it. How do you respond to it?
I have a very personal way of doing it, actually.
Okay.
And I understand. I think there are a large part of that is the legacy of public radio that may have been true, say, two decades ago. So I think some of it, a huge part of it, is just perception. We at NPR are a journalist organization. It's fact-based. We try to do as much as we can, as much as any human being can, to, you know, we all have our own biases. We all have our own points of view, to put them aside to cover the news. When I took this job, one of the big surprises, I got emails from everybody I've ever known since the third grade congratulating me on the job and, you know, wishing me well, and most of them telling me how much they enjoy NPR. Many of them Republicans, many of them very conservative Republicans. And those are the ones I followed up with. Tell me your point of view. What do you hear? What do you like? What don't you like? And some people felt that maybe we were sometimes a little left of center. There was not one of these people that told me that they thought we were way off base. In conversations, when people do say that, I give them my business card. I said, if you hear something on us, on NPR, that you think is biased, send me a note. No one's taken me up on that yet.
Not yet.
No.
You're all moan. He's the new president and CEO of NPR. Short break. We'll be right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Unisys Corporation, maker of Unisys Stealth cybersecurity software. You can't hack what you can't see. Learn more at unisys.com/stealth. From Carbonite, providing secure and automatic backup and recovery for businesses and homes. Since 2005, Carbonite has recovered nearly 40 billion files for its customers, from accounting databases to family photos. Learn more at carbonite.com. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back. Jarl Moon is with me. We're going to talk about his name in just a moment. He is the brand new CEO of NPR, and he came in because not only does he feel a great dedication and loyalty to public radio, but believes with his knowledge, understanding of public broadcasting, and his work in the financial realm, that he can bring great good to public radio. Talk about your name, Jarl.
Well, my father's name was Earl, and thank goodness he didn't want me to be Earl Jr. He wanted something a little more creative. So he and my mother did some research and found out that the original name was derived from Norwegian, which is Jarl. Jarl became Germanicized. It became Carl with a C, Carl with a K, and then ultimately Anglicized. It became Earl with an E. And so that's how I got the name. It was funny because when I was in radio for years, I started out as a disc jockey. I knew it was a terrible name for being a disc jockey. No one would remember it. No one could say it. No one could write it. So I created this on-air persona when I was 12 or 13. It's Lee Masters. And I used that for 38, 39 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So now it's really funny because I work at NPR and we have Netta Ulaby and Lakshmi Singh and Soraya Sardi Nelson. I can be Jarl Moon.
Exactly. And what about the last name?
That's German.
It's German. Mm-hmm. Okay, that clears that up. Here's an email, and we get lots of these kinds of emails as well. It's from Lee, who says, more and more I'm dismayed by the growing number and caliber of corporate sponsorship and advertising on NPR. I find it very troubling. The likes of Walmart, Fox TV, and the oil industry are paying for various programs on NPR. And I suspect that the trend toward more entertainment news and interviews on shows like Fresh Air has something to do with a major focus on corporate support. What is your position on corporate money dominating what is supposed to be a radio network for the public interest? Will you press for restoration of federal funding that's dried up over the last decade?
Well, there are four questions there, unless I've lost count. So I'll try to deal with them. First, I want to get into the specifics. The number of corporate sponsors on the air, it's remained static. The number of underwriting mentions that we have on the air has remained the same for a number of years. So that's not increased. The listener talks about the caliber, quote, the caliber, citing Walmart and Fox and oil companies. I don't know what the caliber means. It might mean that this particular listener is not a fan of Walmart or Fox or specific oil companies. We want to have a very unbiased approach. We do not have any advocacy announcements on the air. No one is allowed to advocate for any position. They're not allowed to do promotional sales on the air. They simply support NPR. And if we are to be unbiased, who's going to ultimately determine what we take and what we don't take? As long as they're not advocating a position,
but then
we're fine.
The question becomes, do they get any special treatment in return?
None. And I know some listeners are listening now and going, I don't believe that. But there's absolutely none. We have a firewall between our news department and the corporate underwriting. When you hear a story about entertainment news on the air, it's because there's something happening in the culture. We don't just do hard news. We've always done a mix. One of the great virtues and joys of listening to public radio is to hear a great story about what's going on, an in-depth story about Ebola or ISIS, followed by a great story about what's happening in the world of science, and then maybe an interview with a poet. And maybe one time it's, you know, the obituary of Philip Levine, who was the, you know, the poet of ordinary lives a few weeks ago. And it could be a movie that's coming out. It could be House of Cards returning to Netflix. The editors make the decisions about what's going on in the environment, in culture, that's going to be interesting to our listeners.
And that has nothing to do with the underwriters.
Zero.
The other thing that I think people do wonder about is whether reporters are fearful of offending any of those underwriters. But you say there is an absolute firewall.
There is. If anything, the journalists that work for us would be more interested in demonstrating as best they could that they're not fearful at all. You know, if anything, I think that would be more of an issue.
You've said that public radio journalism is more important than ever.
It's
Talk
true.
About why.
Well, it's just, you know, unfortunately, what's happened because of, you know, the commercial demands on journalistic organizations, and we'll take them as pieces. There's the newspaper business, and if we put the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times kind of aside for a moment, they're huge national institutions. They're gonna figure it out, and they're gonna do a great job. But in a lot of communities around the country, the newspapers really greatly diminished. I was in Kansas City a few weeks ago, and I picked up the Kansas City Star. You know, a newspaper a lot of people know for many years, including, what, the Roger Miller song, I guess, that was many years ago. I picked it up on the way to the radio station. It was 14 pages long. A few days later, I was in Tampa, Florida, and I picked up the Tampa Times. And if you include the commercial insert, that was 22 pages. Without the commercial insert, it was 14 pages. That's happening in communities all across the country. The one place that people can get local news about what's happening in their communities that matters is public radio. Television, in order to get ratings, has kind of gone more local television to crime stories, national news that used to be the thing everybody did every night, sit down in front of the television set at 6, 6:30 or so and watch the national news. They have to do shorter stories. They have to be more lifestyle. And cable news has become ideological, either far left, far right, or sensational. So we think, I feel very strongly, that public radio locally and nationally provides a service that a lot of people can't get, particularly in the smaller communities.
And what about international reporting?
Huge. And, you know, we have 17 bureaus around the world. 2 weeks from now, my plan is over the next year to get to all of our international bureaus. In a few weeks, I'm going to Asia, Beijing, Shanghai, Seoul, and also New Delhi. And we've got these wonderful reporters that are on the ground providing coverage that you just can't get very many places.
Didn't you just agree to go wash someone's car?
Yes, it's true.
Where?
Kent, Ohio.
Why?
We're doing a promotion, and we're trying to get the stations. We want to have fun, too. We're doing serious work, but I want the people that work for us and the people that work with us in the system to have fun doing what we're doing. And we're doing a promotion to get people to listen to Morning Edition. We're doing this for 6 months. We've got 90% of the stations in the country that carry Morning Edition to participate. So we do a little fun drawing every month. And this month we pulled a name out of, it was a tote bag. We pulled it out of an NPR tote bag. And a guy named Daniel Skinner, who runs WKSU, Kent State University in Kent, Ohio. I'm flying there to wash his car. To thank him for it. You'll see the lengths I'll go to for public radio.
But, you know, as you said at the outset, NPR has had financial difficulties, perennial operational deficits, staff cuts, staff buyouts. What's your plan to get NPR back on good, sound financial footing?
Well, there are a lot of pieces in that puzzle. But the first is just, and this is will probably bore most of your listeners, so I'll be brief, is just having really rigorous financial disciplines in place. A lot of the things that any business person would do to make sure that an organization is well run, keeping an eye on expenses, making sure that when we spend money, it's on things that matter. We're spending money on journalism, spending money on international journalism. And some of the other things that maybe are behind the scenes that are not on the air, we can be more disciplined about. That's part of it. The second part of it is doing a better job of getting people to support NPR and support the mission of our public radio stations, whether it's underwriters locally or nationally, whether it's institutions, foundations, individual donations. We, of course, somebody, the fourth part of the question your listener raised earlier is, are we going to try to get the federal funding increased? We would love to. I don't know how realistic that is. That's not part of my game plan in terms of something I'm counting on, but we would continue to try and do it.
But when you go to see members of Congress, why are you going to them?
Well, more than anything now is to make sure that money is not cut. I am not there asking for more.
You fear that more money will be cut.
Yes, and not so much from us at NPR. As I said, it's for us, it's a 1.5%. It's around $2 million. It's not directly from the government. It's money that we compete for every year for grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And, you know, for us, if we don't have a program, whether it's international coverage or doing something about working collaborative journalism with the stations or some grant, we have to apply for it every year. And it's around $2 million, not a lot of money. We fear more than for us. We fear for the stations in these communities all across the country that are providing great news and information.
I have neglected to remind people that they can see our program today. We are streaming live video. If you go to drshow.com, or you can click on Watch Live. I hope you'll do that and enjoy the program both by listening and by seeing our new NPR president and CEO, Yarl Mohn. What in your background do you believe will help you to make NPR financially stronger?
Well, you know, I've spent my career as a business guy, and I've worked in media, and I've worked with some remarkable people. I'm working with a really amazing group of remarkable people now, and just providing best practices for how to build a business. And at the core of that, it's really understanding who's listening, understanding and super serving the core audience. And for an NPR listener, for a public radio listener, they're incredibly curious. They're well-informed. They want to hear both sides of an argument. They want to get fact-based journalism. We call it explanatory journalism. It's not just what happened. This happened, this happened, and then this happened. Another story. What's the context? What's the framework for the story? Really doing as good a job as we can, giving the folks in the newsroom all the resources that they need to do a great job. And then my job is to make sure that we have the financial support to do that.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We've got lots of callers. Let's open the phones now. 800-433-8850 to Bardia in Gainesville, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. A pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course.
There are so many public radio stations around the country that are operated either by or in conjunction with educational institutions, you know, not least WAMU, the station WUFT at the University of Florida. I was curious, is there a way to sort of quantify the amount of expense that those stations take out of, or that they provide for themselves, because they're used, you know, they provide them as educational opportunities, and so they undertake the cost of operating them. Is that amount quantifiable in terms of how much other money would not have to come from listeners, underwriting, or other sources?
Each of these institutions is very different. Some of them are community colleges. The station I was affiliated with in Los Angeles, KPCC, is Pasadena City College. The other public radio station in L.A. is Santa Monica Community College. Here you have American University.
And our financial relationship is very different.
Mm-hmm. Each one's different.
Yeah.
Depending on the size of the community, whether it's a community college, a large university. So it varies wildly. The question is it quantifiable? Yes. For each station, that's readily knowable information. It's easily accessible, but it varies widely from station to station.
All right, to Houston, Texas, BC, you're on the air.
Hello, Diane. Can you hear me?
Certainly can. Go right ahead, sir.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I wanted to say, as a fellow dystonia, a focal dystonia sufferer, your triumph over it has been very heartening.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you. My local public radio station is KUHF. They branched off their classical music programming to KUHA. They fired all their musical staff and have gone into importing their music through the Minneapolis streaming system. Their news programming is taking a very more, well, they've started shuffling programs like Fresh Air and Here and Now to the Hinter Hours, and substituting programs like Texas Now, which is a locally produced program that has a much more conservative spin than I usually hear on NPR programs. I'm very worried about my local station, and I'd like your guest to comment.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, I appreciate it. Interestingly, next week I'm going to be in Texas for the whole week. I'm going to Dallas. I'm going to Houston to visit KUHF, so I'll have a chance to listen for myself. I think a huge part of it, first, there are two pieces, I think, to the question that you and the observations you make. One is what's going on with classical music. I think this is a shift to more locally produced programming, which we're hugely supportive of. We're also very supportive of being local and covering what's going on in local communities. But I'll be there next week, and I'll find out for myself.
You can't find out for yourself. Yarl Moan, president and CEO of NPR. Don't forget, when we come back, you can watch the program as well as listen. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Angie's List, providing online access to service ratings and reviews so consumers can find local plumbers, landscapers, HVAC professionals, house cleaners, and other services. Learn more at angieslist.com. From LegalZoom, for over 10 years providing solutions for business owners, families, and individuals to get legal help, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
On the next Fresh Air, Larry David, the creator and star of Curb Your Enthusiasm and co-creator of Seinfeld, he has a new play on Broadway, which he wrote and reluctantly stars in. So who did he intend to cast in the lead?
Anyone. Anyone in particular. Anyone. Except me.
Join us.
Welcome back. If you've just joined us, Yarl Moan is with me. He is the new president and CEO of NPR. He's been on the job, what now, 7 months?
Yeah, Yarl? I think we're in 8 now.
Yeah,
I'm losing count.
And you can see the program as well as listen to it by going to drshow at WAMU or drshow.org and watch live. Let's go now to, Joe in Lansing, Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane.
Hi there.
Topical and on par as always.
Good.
I fear your funding issues are going to get worse and worse. You have people like Scott Walker that, he's obviously burnishing his presidential aspirations by doing, cutting what he can. And I have a general sense I'm an independent, but a lot of people I know that are conservative have this view that NPR is basically liberal. And for the most part, I just don't think they could actually recognize independent journalism if it bit them on the butt, but that's just my opinion. And so I think you're going to have worse and worse where they're going to look to cut that. And I'm also curious to know, Diane, if you or your bookers have ever had problems getting guests from
nope.
the conservative side because of this perception that
nope.
they have that NPR
nope.
is liberal.
They're always happy to come on, whether they're conservative, liberal, with no political orientation at all. We've never had problems getting on guests. But do you want to respond, Jarl?
Well, you know, I already mentioned that. We already kind of addressed it. But I tell a lot of people speak about it in theory. When I talk to friends of mine that might have that perception, I said, give me an example. Listen, give me an example, send it to me. We all have our individual biases, and sometimes we don't hear things that might be there. We have an ombudsman. We take that role very seriously. We hired Elizabeth Jensen to be our ombudsman. She filters, goes through emails, phone calls that people send to us that feel that we are not covering something as fairly or as appropriately as we should. We're vigilant. We know, can we be better? Of course we can, and we're committed to that as journalists.
Let's go to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if he still stood by his decision to cut Tell Me More. I mean, he did it when first 8 months, he did it pretty soon. Didn't seem like he tried to fund the show. And the last 6 months of the year seemed to be about all the topics that that show would cover. I mean, money versus journalism, it seems like the journalism is suffering.
You're going to get lots of questions regarding
Well, first,
that.
It was not me. This Tell Me More was canceled prior to my arrival. The show remained on the air, but the announcement, the decision was made. I started July 1st. The show ended shortly thereafter, but the decision was made prior to my being hired.
Did you know about that decision before it was announced publicly?
Yeah, well, they let me know, but I hadn't officially started. I'm not even sure when I heard about it if I'd been officially hired at that point. But it predates me. But let's put that aside for a second and talk about what our position is. We believe very strongly, very deeply, that the P in NPR stands for public. We need to represent a wide range of diversity, and not just racial and ethnic diversity. That's hugely important. That's the one that gets a lot of attention, and we'll talk about what we're doing there. But it also represents geographical diversity. So your caller from Florida, you had a caller from Houston, you have a caller from Connecticut here, that we have voices from all over the country.
Which is why I love call-in talk radio.
Exactly. We want to make sure the different ideologies, political, whether it's conservative or liberal or independent, people of different faiths, people of different ages. This is really important for public radio, I believe. What we're doing, and back to Tell Me More, Michelle Martin is still very much a part of NPR. She covers really important issues. She was, earlier, your first hour, you did a show on Ferguson. She did some remarkable reporting from Ferguson for Morning Edition and All Things Considered. She did a series of town hall meetings there about that. And she is a huge part of what we're doing moving forward. Personally, I believe in any one of these diversity groups, whether it's racial or age or geographic, it doesn't make sense to do shows just targeted to that audience. I think all of our programming, every bit of it, needs to have all these voices within those shows.
Fully agree. Let's go to Paducah, Kentucky, your wife's home state.
Yes.
Let's go to Gregory. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Hi. You're my favorite show. I love you. And but I'm kind of so nervous right now because this goes to the heart of, like, who I am as a person. The first question, there's two questions, and I'll keep it brief. The
sure.
First one is, you guys are talking about that you never accept political advertisements or commercials for products, and that's way off the mark. I live in Paducah. We have Murray State University-sponsored station. Every day at 3 o'clock, we hear All Things Considered, and it is sponsored by the Walton Foundation. Right through, they talk about how we're for vouchers. They don't say vouchers, but choice and schools. It's a heated topic right now on the left and the right. And then they say you could go to our website to learn more about school choices. And, oh, it makes me so upset. So I disagree with the gentleman who's saying you don't take political viewpoints and sponsorships.
We don't. Yeah, I don't know if I'll have to check to find out what's going on with the Walton Foundation. I'm not aware. I've never heard an announcement like that. We do no advocacy, none.
It's every day, sir, every day. It says that you can go to our website and learn more about school choice. I don't know if it's our NPR station, but I'm not making this up. I'm born again Christian. That's what I'm telling you. It's the God's honest truth.
All right. Well,
you got to listen in. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
But as far as products are concerned, I mean, he talked about the Walton Foundation, which is very different from pushing a product.
Right.
So I think we have to keep those separate. Let's now... If I can get to Natalie here in Washington, D.C., you're on the air.
Thank you very much. It's appropriate or ideal that this gentleman who just got off from Paducah, my concern is with your station, Diane, WAMU, ever since the new building went up, delighted that it went up, but all we hear advertising, two or three in a row, and you can use any reasoning that it's not advertising, it is advertising. And with regard to the gentleman who just called in from Paducah and the CEO there saying, well, this is not, you know, a product, that's splitting hairs. They are worse than a product if Walmart is telling you to go somewhere because it's their ideology and their political outlook that they're putting on. And I think NPR is in big trouble, and I think WAMU is following suit with these ads. Why do we have to have these ads, these women's voices over and over and over? It just never ends, and it has deteriorated WAMU, in my opinion, and public radio in general.
Natalie, I'm glad you called. I think that what she is getting to, Yarl, is the increased necessity for funding.
Yeah.
And it comes from these foundations, corporations, individual underwriters. I understand that perception on the part of a listener who says, what's going on here? And yet, people still want public radio to go on, well, as it has.
The reality is that almost everybody that's listening to public radio, whether it's here at WAMU, any of the stations across the country that are carrying your show on NPR, is most of them want great journalism. Really good journalism, keeping 17 bureaus open around the world, keeping 17 bureaus in the United States. We have over 800 people that work at NPR. In the system, there are 200 newsrooms in the country at public radio stations, somewhere in the area of 1,500 to 1,800 local journalists. To do that and to do a better job and increase that takes a lot of money. It takes foundations. It takes corporations. It takes individual contributions. So, you know, people can complain all they want. This is the place to get it. They need, if they believe in it deeply, they need to understand the economic realities. The money does not fall from the sky magically. And the only alternative is then to not do the journalism, to cut it back.
There is another alternative. We know that only a small percentage of our huge 37 million listeners to, say, Morning Edition contribute.
Roughly 10%.
Exactly.
10%. So until 100% or 50%, some other number, contribute, we only have another choice, and that's to do less. And we have very strict guidelines. There's nothing promotional. Notwithstanding what your caller said, there's no advocacy commercials or announcements. There are no promotional announcements at all. They're people that are supporting our mission. Now, you may not like them. You may not like the voices. You may not like the client, but they're not promoting a position.
Here's an email from John. He says, I saw in the Huffington Post that NPR has decided to drastically reduce its staff dedicated to covering climate change and the environment, leaving just one part-time reporter on that beat. Do you have a comment?
Of course, it's not true. We're covering the climate and the environment every bit as much as we have. The newsroom has been restructured in the way it's done. We don't have reporters that are specifically tasked just with climate. They may be on the science desk covering many other topics, but the interest in a particular story, I'll give you an example, another science story, is Ebola, okay? That surfaces, you throw more people toward Ebola. Now, I just read in the paper, heard this morning, that I think in Liberia, the last patient has recovered. So maybe that goes away. We're not dedicating as many reporters on the science desk to that. If there's an oil spill, the reporters then go in that direction. It's just being very judicious in the way we allocate the resources on the science desk.
And you have to do that, it would seem to me. But what it also does, perhaps in the minds of people who read a piece like that in the Huffington Post, is to stretch your reporters more thinly.
Well, it, like anything, it's allocation of resources. We make sure that the biggest stories of the day, we're gearing up for the elections in 2016. Been spending a lot of time with our news division to talk about what resources are necessary to really do a great job. So that will be, one of the areas of focus for us.
All right, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's take a call from Spring Bay, Illinois. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question.
Surely.
Does the new director have any idea of a comparison in funding between NPR and, let's say, the VOA or other broadcast outlets that the federal government supports? My sneaking suspicion would be, if anyone investigated those budgets, that we would discover that we are spending, as taxpayers, a lot more money to inform people in Hindi or Farsi or some other language than we are spending to inform our own electorate.
It's a great question. I don't know the answer to it, but it's a great question. And by this afternoon,
you're going to find out.
I love this call.
You're going to find out.
That's
okay.
A very astute question.
And I think he was also asking about other networks in the public radio realm, for example, PRI or American Public Media. I mean, how are those funds divided up?
I don't know how much money PRI gets, say, from the CPB or American Public Media, but the process is the same. They have to compete for money every year for grants. There's no ongoing budgeting for them, and there's no and most of it comes indirectly through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
All right. Carl in Breedsville, Michigan says, do you foresee NPR making an effort to cover that part of the Americas that lies to the south of Mexico in anywhere near the proportion of its importance to the U.S. and the rest of the world?
Well, it's a great question. It's in a very important part of the world, and we do have bureaus in Mexico City and in Latin America, and we actually have an aspiration to add a couple there. There's a lot going on, and on our wish list, as we try to allocate the resources to, you know, what are the most important stories or the most urgent stories of the day, we have to make those decisions. But that's on our wish list of things we'd like to do a better job of.
And Venezuela, Haiti, Argentina, are we there?
Well, we're not in those specific countries. We can't have a bureau, as much as we'd like to, in each country of the world. We have to We have 17, and that's more than most electronic media companies have. So we think we're doing a better job than almost anybody else in that regard. Could we do better? Of course we could. Do we have ideas about how we'd like to go about it? Yes. And the South Americas are definitely an area that we're focused on, we'd like to focus more on.
You've committed to staying with NPR for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's not your necessarily your outside commitment, but
that's my minimum.
I'm wondering what you think, very briefly, you can accomplish in those 5 years.
Well, very briefly, it's going to be tough, but the most important thing is to first, the short term is get the company and the organization to a break-even point. We committed to the board of directors that we would do that this year, and we're on target to do it.
Good.
That's the most important.
Good.
Then to make sure that we have all the resources that our news department needs so we can cover the most important stories of the day and do great storytelling.
Yoram Mohn, he is president and CEO of NPR. What a pleasure to
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Natalie Urblifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts.